Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at haunted Wisconsin. Our guest, Michael Norman, Professor Emeritus of Journalism at the University of Wisconsin River Falls, former newspaper and radio journalist. He co-authored the first edition of Haunted Wisconsin, and I'm pretty darn sure I talked with him about it when it came out in 1980. And he did several other titles with Beth Scott, and I believe I talked to Beth as well. His own books included Haunted Homeland, The Nearly Departed, Minnesota Ghost Stories and Legends, and the third edition of Haunted Wisconsin has just been released. I finished it, about a week ago, and really enjoyed it. And Michael's not with me in the studio, but he joins us from our Eau Claire studios. And let me see if I've got him. Michael, you there?
Good morning, Larry. I'm here.
Oh, wow. You're coming in loud and clear. Great to be able to talk to you. It's been a long time.
Well, I think you're right that the first time we talked was about 31 years ago when we were both teenagers starting out in the business, and maybe one or two times over the years since then. So nice to be with you again.
Yeah.
That we're both still working and we're still...
Yeah, we're still alive and kicking. We haven't gone into that other world yet.
Right.
We haven't become ghosts ourselves.
Right. We haven't become a story in my book.
No. That's a good thing as far as I'm concerned, to be perfectly honest. It was fun to read the stories again. And some I remembered a bit, and you know, it's been a while since I'd looked at them. But some new things too in your book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I put some. This is a third edition. It's not an all new book. Most of the original stories are there. I've updated a few, added a couple of new ones, and enough to freshen it up a little bit after two earlier editions, and the first one and then the second one in 2001.
You've written a lot about haunting and ghosts and so forth, and I think the story of how you got involved in this is pretty interesting. Talk about that.
Well, Beth and I had no intention necessarily of writing a collection of Wisconsin ghost stories. We were both journalists. I was teaching at UW River Falls. She was a professional freelance writer, had been for many years, and a series of conversations about writing. I suggested the idea that perhaps writing a book was the kind of Mount Olympus for writers. She agreed, but had no interest in it. But I came back by saying, well, if we did a series of short pieces, pretty soon we'd have a book and we wouldn't even know it. It would just be there, right? And... Then, looking around what to write about, we were both journalists. We wanted to write something nonfiction, and I came upon Robert Gard's quote that I included in the first edition. That in his ramblings around the state, as a folklorist and a collector of stories, of course, that he thought Wisconsin was the most haunted of all states, which I thought was a fairly extraordinary claim to make. But then again, he's a folklorist, and they maybe tend to exaggerate once in a while on these sorts of things. But I pointed it out to Beth, and I said, gee, isn't that interesting that there are ghost stories in Wisconsin? There hadn't been a book written about them. And I said, well, perhaps we want to do this. And so that's sort of how we decided to settle on this subject, because it had not been written about before.
And here you are 30 years later.
And amazing. I had no intention. I mean, neither one of us. We were going to write a book and then sort of fade off into the sunset. But it was, it proved popular. The publisher, Stanton and Lee, wanted, asked what our next one was, and we didn't have one. But in the course of our research, we had both being pack rats. We had, collected tales, ghost stories that we had come across in our research, and. Figured out that we had enough material for a book about the Midwest. Again, a book that hadn't been written, and that became Haunted Heartland. It came out in 1985, and then that led to Haunted America, Historic Haunted America, and a number of others.
Yeah, my man. Scott in West Dallas has a comment or question for us. By the way, let me just give the number. If you'd like to join in, here's that number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can post right there. And maybe you've got a story to tell. Maybe you've got a question to ask. Feel free. And Scott in West Dallas, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, me and my wife have been living in a house in West Dallas for 10 years. It's by Barkwood Funeral Home. It used to be the funeral home before they actually built the funeral home. We have seen quite a few things that are very hard to explain, like coming home one day, and both me and my wife and my son were together. We came home when nobody else had the key out, and we saw stuff stacked up on the table. Every now and then we see, like, I don't know, not really ghosts, but just, like, images. Our dogs going up all the time, you know, they'll stare at the ceiling and stuff like that. It's just a bunch of weird stuff.
Well, you know, well, thanks for calling, Scott. This is the kind of thing that appears regularly in your book, Michael.
Well, those personal incidents, you know, when we set out to write Haunted Wisconsin and really through the rest of the books, what we wanted to do to a large extent was find people's stories of actual experiences, things that they had gone through, rather than you know, put together perhaps a travel guide or a road guide to ghosts. We wanted to tell stories. And so we sought them around the state and kind of filtered through them. Didn't use all of them. Some we thought were fairly thin, not much going on. Others much more expansive and extensive. And then interviewed people, went to the places, and wrote the stories from there if we thought they, you know, fit into what we were looking for.
And this whole business of things being stacked up or moved around or sometimes lights turned on.
Yeah, a poltergeist-type experience. You know, yeah. People who report poltergeist, you know, things are moved or stacked up. Things are ripped apart. Often it occurs in a home with young children, they report.
Hmm. Thank you, Scott, for calling. Trevor in Jefferson, we turn to you next. Hi, Trevor.
Hi there. I guess this isn't particularly a ghost question, but it certainly fits into the folklore mysterious realm. I was just wondering if the guest was aware of any recent sightings of the Beast of Bray Road, which would be the werewolf creature that apparently inhabits the area around Elkhorn, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And I can take my answer off the air.
All right. Thank you for calling.
No, I haven't gone into the area of mythical creatures and beasts or you know the Beast of Bray Road. I'm familiar with that. There's another writer who has written several books about that, but I've stuck to ghost stories and approach it, I think, more. One of the things that we wanted to make clear from the very beginning, and I still do, is that I'm not a parapsychologist. I'm not even really a ghost hunter. I'm a ghost storyteller, and I leave it to mm-hmm. others to, you know, try to figure out, you know, whether a place is haunted. I like to hear the stories and then tell them and let the reader decide whether to believe them or not.
According to the stories, ghosts don't seem to haunt random locations. They mm-hmm. instead they seem to have a be where there's a connection that they had during their life. Can you give some examples of stories like that?
Right. Well, often it's a ghost that comes back to perhaps perform an activity that they were familiar or that they usually did during life. Sometimes it is to help the living. Sometimes it is to punish the living. Mm-hmm. You know, there are a variety of reasons for that. Sometimes it's difficult to find the reason for the haunting or the, you know, the person, mm-hmm. unless you go back into the history of a place, you can often, you know, discover what, you know, what the, you know, what the individual, has done. There's a very famous, story from, a place that was called Summerwind in Vilas County up, against the, border with the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And, a former owner there thought that, it was the ghost of Jonathan Carver come back to look for a deed to the property. But subsequent research showed that was probably not the case. In another story, it was a former owner of a farm that was seen walking up the gravel road to the farmhouse toward the door. but then never reaching the door and disappearing before that point. So usually it's someone who is repeating an activity that they did during life.
Helen in Cottage Grove. Let's go to you. Hi, Helen. Thank you for calling.
All right. It sounds really weird, but we did move into a smaller old house, and it was in 29, and we bought it, and everything was really, it was just so weird. Everything was cool, and once we bought it, we started to hear some, like, old-time radio, and we thought, oh, boy, that's just something, you know. And then we would sleep upstairs, and my brother would sleep downstairs, and he would say, geez, your radio is so loud. And we're like, we didn't have our radio on at all. And then I had a goofy friend that said she was, psychic, and she went through this, you know, the rooms and everything, and she said, there's an old man that sleeps in my, well, we called it our cozy room. And my brother, you know, stayed there, and all of a sudden he's like, wow, gosh, you guys' radio is so loud. And we said, we don't have a radio on, you know, last night. And so we did this psychic thing, and my brother was there. And so she wrote down, she didn't write down, but she drew what she felt. And it was an old, remember those old, you know, radios that are
floor models. Yeah,
exactly.
Sure.
And she she sketched that, and my brother cruised. He was there that day, and he's like, "No, I can't." It was so scary, and I don't know if it had to do with like the cemetery across the street, but it was a wonderful, nice lady. And also, she lost her husband to emphysema in this house, and we had a few broken ashtrays because we smoke. It was a little weird, and when we bought it, I was sitting down at the cafe, are you going to buy that house? It's haunted. I was giving him, you know, I thought, oh, come on, you're joking. Mm-hmm. But yeah, proved
to be true.
It was, but nice. Not mean, nothing. A little bit of a presence. It was, well, and I loved it there. So.
There you go. Comment, Michael?
Well, often that's the way a haunting occurs, not as something scary, not as blood dripping down walls or screaming banshees. It's very often a comforting presence. It's a former owner who just doesn't want to leave. And that sounds like this particular case, it seems to be.
Thanks again for calling. Appreciate your call. Michael Norman, our guest today, he is the author of Haunted Wisconsin, and a great pleasure to have him on. It's the third edition of the Haunted Wisconsin. It's just been released. He joins us from our Eau Claire studios. You can join in, too, with your questions or comments or maybe some experiences that you've got to share. About being haunted, maybe? I don't know. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go to my Facebook page and post there at the Larry Mueller Show. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking with author Michael Norman today about his book, Haunted Wisconsin. It's the third edition. Certainly looking forward to hearing what you have to say. Comments or questions, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Alex in Wauwatosa up next. So let's go there. Hi, Alex. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Just wanted to say that I'm 25 right now, and when I was a little girl, my mom had always been interested in ghosts and poltergeists. And when I was little, probably around 6 or 7, I was exploring through my parents' bookcase and found a copy of Wisconsin, and took it and looked at it in my room and was quite scared for many years after reading it, and it kept my childhood pretty interesting. So thanks for that.
Well, there you go, Michael. You scared the the pants off Alex.
I hope it didn't change her forever for life.
Definitely very interested in ghost stories now, and have a great fascination with horror films, and enjoy the Halloween season. So thanks again.
All right. Thank you, Alex, for calling. All right. 30 years later. Matt in Madison. Your turn. Hi, Matt.
Hello. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Well, my family has kind of a plethora of ghost stories, so I just wanted to share one of the more interesting ones and then just ask a quick question about the types of sightings you get.
Okay.
So apparently my brother lived in Richland Center with his friend, and they moved into like an old house when they were going to college. And apparently, this is what they claim, but apparently they had seen like this woman that appeared in the... like would appear in the bathroom in the shower when they were like in the bathroom. And then apparently one night my brother woke up and saw the ghostly woman like inside his room, and there was like a green glow around him and he couldn't move. And apparently his friend came in and saw the same thing and saw like this kind of green glow around him, and I don't know. So that was his story. Then my family has a story of like a cowboy that used to sit at the end of the bed. So I don't know, for whatever reason, my family has quite a few ghost stories. But the one I wanted to ask about was my stepmom claims that she saw a spirit of a Native American ghost in her house. And I know my professor had told me about this book that was written about explaining like sightings of American Indian ghosts as kind of like a trauma of, you know, white guilt for what we had done to the Native Americans. I was just wondering if we're familiar with that book or wanted to comment on any of that stuff. So.
All right. Great. Thank you for calling.
I didn't get the title of the book. I don't
know. Matt, do you have the title of the book? Ah, we lost him.
No, I think Matt's gone. Many, many ghost stories are connected to Native American legends and Native American locales. One of the stories in the book called Ghost Island takes place in the Chippewa Flowage area up in Sawyer County east of Hayward. And one of the suggestions as to what caused an orb to appear, a very strange orb, and was photographed by a fishing guide up there, is the large number of Native American burial spaces on the island. So sometimes that does occur, and of course in films and in fiction, houses built on Indian burial mounds are said to be haunted as well. But again, that's fiction or film.
Bonita in Green Bay, we turn to you next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. Yeah, I've had stuff happen in my apartment. I've got a small apartment, and the first thing that really freaked me out, I had fallen asleep about 8:30 at night, and around 11:30, I felt myself struggling, and I opened my eyes, and there was this great big gray cloud that covered my bedroom door. And then this gray cloud sort of wafted away and turned into some little white clouds. And at the back of the last little white cloud, there was like a dragon's tail, a white dragon's tail, sort of a satin finish. And after that, I could hear like three knocks on the bottom of the door. And after that, there was like a little blue light that was shining toward me from and I looked in back to see if the light was coming from the window, and the drapes were completely closed. There was no light, and I was sleeping with my cat, and my cat didn't wake up with the cloud and the dragon's tail, but my cat woke up with the knocks on the bottom of the door. And I turned and tried to go back to sleep, and I said to my cat, well, maybe baby's back, because my other cat had passed away 3 years ago. But then I thought to myself, well, if it was my gray cat, my gray and white cat, he wouldn't have been this great big gray cloud. He would have been a little little cloud running along the floor playing with my black cat. You know, and I got out of bed, and I stayed up about an hour and a half and went to work the next morning, and all during the day I'm thinking about this. It took me a month after that before I could fall asleep.
Oh.
With the first week, I had every light on in the house. I would go to bed with the lights on, and you know, and I would cover my eyes in order to fall asleep. It took me a full month before I could fall asleep with every light off in the house. And ever since then, I've had things happen, but they'll happen sort of streaky. One of the things that, now this was in those around maybe around Christmas of 2007. I heard 6 months before the Christmas of 2007, around three o'clock in the morning. I've got a lot of pains from arthritis in my legs and my feet. So sometimes I, you know, fall asleep and get up and I'd be awake and trying to go back to sleep because of my legs. Anyhow, I heard like a child's voice say, "Hello, Mama." And then around Christmas, I saw, I had to get up, I had to use the bathroom, so I opened my eyes, and there was a little face by my bed, but all I could see was the face. It was it looked like a child, maybe between 6 and 8, and she had blonde, sort of grubby hair, sort of short, grubby hair. She looked at me, be playing all, you know, she'd been playing all day, and then I turned my eyes away, and I looked back, and she was still there.
Yeah.
But then she sort of, the face sort of disintegrated into like sort of greenish yellow light and disappeared.
Wow. So, Michael, you've had some report on some experiences kind of like that in your book.
That was a full night that she had, and I think she has a book right there that from her descriptions. Interesting personal experiences like that. I think give enough of an indication to people that, you know, maybe there's something to it, to continue belief in the supernatural or in the possibility of ghosts and haunted houses. There's been no scientific evidence that such things exist, but there are enough anecdotal stories, and we've heard some of them today, that people, you know, continue to believe in this.
I have an email from Sue in Appleton wondering if you touch on the Grand Opera House in Oshkosh. She's heard stories that it's haunted.
Right. There are stories with the Grand Opera House. We did have a short piece about that, I believe, in the first edition. Sometimes stories are told about places or about buildings, but you can't track them back to a source. And that's really what I look for and what we've always looked for in the books, and that is someone's personal experience. So at the Grand Opera House and in other locations, there's supposed to be a ghost, but again, you can't find someone with a substantial personal experience with this ghost, or you can't track it back to its source. People just say, well, there's a ghost. There's a ghost of a, you know, in theaters, for instance, every old theater, I think, in the country has at least one ghost. it's usually a dead workman, somebody who was building the theater, or it's an actress who committed suicide, or it's, you know, it's someone connected with the theater. And those legends, and I would categorize most of them as legends, you know, persist because you can't track them back either to an actual historical incident or to individuals with, you know, stories that can be verified or stories that seem substantial. And to find those are unusual.
Well, you yourself had an experience in a theater, if I'm not mistaken.
I did have an experience with a ghost in a theater, and it was one of those experiences that continues to puzzle me. And oddly enough, you know, as I say, there's a ghost in every, you know, in every old theater. This is not a terribly old theater. In fact, it's the theater on the campus where I taught, UW River Falls. But it does have a ghost, with at least one substantial sighting, by a professor of theater who is still on campus, and even an identity to this individual, and that is he was the man who helped design the theater before the Fine Arts Building was constructed, but then died too soon to have worked in it. And a theater professor a number of years ago, after a summer theater rehearsal, writing down some notes in the auditorium, looked up, and a man walked out on stage that he had never seen before, wearing slacks and a short-sleeved shirt, was looking around, didn't say a word. The professor didn't recognize him, asked him if he wanted, you know, what he needed. Do you want anything? He looked at the professor, continued to look around, walked backstage, and the professor thought that was a little strange, got up, walked up on stage, went back. Nobody was there. Looked out the back door, the stage door. A couple of actors were sitting there. No one had come out the door. Could not figure out why that individual was there. And later on, saw a picture of him. Well, my own story, briefly, is that I was in a summer theater production of Love Letters. We were going to open the season. Didn't have anybody backstage during our production. And the second night of the show, shortly after the intermission, I heard from backstage the strum of a ukulele, which is a rather odd thing to have heard. But there was a ukulele on a prop table backstage that it was there for the next production. Nobody had been backstage because the stage manager had locked the doors. No possibility of someone being back there. No explanation. Subsequently, after the show, found out that two other people, the stage manager over a headset and the house manager standing at the back of the auditorium, also heard this strum of a ukulele. Sort of my view is maybe it was Sanford telling me that he was backstage and was watching our, you know, was watching mm-hmm. our backs, and that was the only way for him to make it known. It's a very, very puzzling event for me. I still don't have an explanation for how you can hear a ukulele being strummed when no one was near
it. Nobody was near it. Well, Dale in Eau Claire has a comment or question. Dale, hello to you.
Good morning. So I've been listening with some interest because I think I'm much more of a skeptic than most of your listeners this morning. But I noticed that the author has been careful to say, again, there's been no scientific proof. And I guess it's a little bit of a mystery to me when we live in a world where we can put men on the moon and our science can predict things that are so tremendous that there's really been no scientific proof. I guess I view most ghost stories, and I'd be interested in the author's opinion, as entertainment. I love watching magicians. I love being fooled by card tricks. I love to watch mentalists do their thing. But I'm certainly opposed to people who prey on those who have lost somebody, claiming that they have a real talent in communicating with the dead or to do things. And I'm wondering that, was the whole impetus of your book to be more entertainment or just to collect things, and you've been cautious to say there's been no explanations with this? You've got, you know, an open mind, but it also doesn't appear that you're as much on the bandwagon as some of these shows where people are wandering around and they have 100 ghost sightings per half-hour show on one of the cable channels.
Yeah.
Do you think we've missed science here? Are people really believing in these things, or why are we so quick to jump to ghost as an explanation rather than research it carefully, where some of the ghostbusters say, you know, when we've looked into this, there's actually an explanation, and it didn't appear so at the first.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a great question that we could do an entire program about. I've always, I consider myself an open-minded skeptic. For 30 years, I've interviewed people, I've been to haunted places, I was on board the Queen Mary, I've slept in haunted hotel rooms, all over, and absolutely felt nothing whatsoever, except it was an old hotel room or it was an interesting place to be, until that one little episode that I just described. So I'm skeptical, but I like to keep an open mind. I'm not a ghostbuster. I'm not a parapsychologist. I don't go in and investigate and take in instruments. I don't think these things can be found very easily. I think they are they're rare, and when you find someone though who is a solid witness, responsible individual. I've talked to college administrators and doctors and lawyers and everyone who described to me very strange events that have occurred to them, you know, more than just clouds or a feeling, you know, where they've actually confronted what looks like a physical being, where they have no explanation for what occurred. I remember talking to a college administrator about an experience she had while being a box office assistant at the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul, the home of the Garrison Keillor Prairie Home Companion Show. And she described one afternoon seeing a man in a plaid shirt and black hair sort of playing peekaboo with her at one of the box office windows, and finally getting so fed up she came around to try to find this guy, and there was absolutely no one there. I mean, there was no one in that theater. The theater is supposed to have the ghost of a workman. And when she told me the story, you could still see it in her face. She was reliving that experience. Well, what was that? How did that take place? This is not someone who, creating a story. And I do think that there are people who prey on those who, think they've had an experience, and I have no time for those individuals.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again, Dale, for your call. Don in West Salem, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Don.
Yes, good morning. Who are you going to call?
Yeah, Ghostbusters.
I got kind of a little ghost story. We moved into a house some 30-odd years ago. And about 6 months after he moved in, one of these grocery store rags had a little story about our house from the previous owners. And they had a problem with a ghost knocking stuff off the shelves and that type of stuff. But we never saw or heard anything before that or anything or even after that and whatever. Well, we had a cat that we had adopted some years earlier, and she lived with us in that house for quite a while, and she passed away. We had a old set of steps back then. One particular step, when she would run upstairs, on one side of it, it would squeak when she ran up it, and when she ran up or down it, she'd meow once. Well, after she passed away, about 6 months or so after that happened, every once in a while you either hear a step squeak and a meow, or you'd hear the meow and then the step squeak. And that happened for quite a few years until we got two other cats. And after we got the other cats, it stopped happening after about 3 months.
Wow. Animal
ghosts. Well, perhaps the first cat wanted to make sure that you were still enjoying a cat's company. And when you got two new ones, felt there was no longer a need to be in the house, I guess.
Yeah, maybe that was it. Thanks, mm-hmm. Don, mm-hmm. for calling. Appreciate it. Jennifer in Janesville, your turn. Hi, Jen.
Hi there. Well, the house that I lived in Janesville when growing up, for some reason, we always just had a feeling and just kind of knew that it was haunted. And nothing ever, too crazy ever happened. But then one night I was home all alone. My parents were in Europe on vacation, and I was home completely alone. And I heard, like a noise in the garage. And then the garage light would turn on. I would shut it off. It would turn back on. And it was just kind of weird. So, I was up that night, and, obviously it was hard for me to sleep. I was only about 13, 14 years old. Well, come to find out that the next day that there was a burglar that had been out and had ransacked a few other homes in the neighborhood, but there was no sign of any ransacking on my house or either house on the side. So we always kind of had the feeling that, you know, maybe the ghost was protecting the house, because it was never scary up until that point. And I also had a question that I had a friend that had moved up to Janesville from the Chicago area, and they knew many people that when they found out that she was moving here, had told her that they had heard and read in many places that Janesville is known throughout different parts of the country as being, you know, haunted or having strange spirits or things like that. I was wondering if you've ever heard anything like that or where that would have come from.
Janesville.
Janesville. I would have no idea where that came from. I think every, you know, in the old days, every community had its haunted house. We would sit around on front porches and grandparents would tell grandchildren the story of the house across town that they would always avoid on Halloween. Now that we have so much electronic media, I think we've lost some of those stories. You have to be careful, too, when someone says a city is the most haunted. You know, did it come from a television show? You know, who says it? How did that occur? What are the stories? You know, bring some skepticism to it, in other words. And because sometimes I think it's done to for promotion, for self-promotion. Yeah. Of course, I'm a good one to talk, right? I'm on the radio promoting my book.
And by the way, I just looked at our Facebook page, and we've got a picture of you at the studio in Eau Claire on our Facebook page.
Oh, that's pretty scary right there. That's pretty scary.
You look pretty good.
Boy, that's fast.
Michael, it's a great pleasure. And you've got Tuesday, November 8th?
Yes.
At 7 p.m.?
In Madison.
You'll be in Madison at the Sequoia Branch Library. It's on Tokay Boulevard. That's November 8th at 7 p.m. And you'll be reading from your book, I presume.
Reading from the book and telling some ghost stories, showing some pictures of some strange objects, and selling books if someone wants to buy one.
So, oh, perfect.
Look forward to seeing everyone.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Michael. Appreciate it.
Larry, pleasure as always.
Michael is, again, let me give you that date. It's November 8th at the Sequoia Branch Library, Tokay Boulevard in Madison. He's going to be here to tell some stories and share some information about ghosts. And tell you what, we're done with the ghosts for now. We're going to shake off the ghosts and the goblins and turn our attention to something less scary for sure. Cheese. I love cheese. The Wisconsin Cheese Originals Annual Festival is this weekend. And we're going to get a preview, and I hope I'm going to get the chance to taste some cheese. Jeannie Carpenter usually brings me some. And she's here to talk about the amazing range of artisan cheeses being made in our state. So stay tuned for a tasty and interesting call here on Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.